understood the meaning of Allie's gesture, he nodded. One of those kids with an old soul, Allie thought. He lowered himself through the window, feet first, and landed lightly on the balcony. When he turned back around, the boy had disappeared. He went east and flew down the stairs, only to see it too late. A Tossin arriving at the base of the staircase. Allie grabbed the banister and launched his weight over it. He landed on both his feet and stumbled forward on one knee. But he scrambled up and kept running, still keeping a tight hold on the crate of plants. A Dirkatsian came out of nowhere, and with a low growl, he lunged. Allie sidestepped, and the fox flew past him. He heard the warning bark he let out. The crowd split. People abandoned handcarts and baskets and went screaming for the streets. The Tossin were made clumsy by their weaponry, but the Dirkatsians were gaining ground, bounding across the market. He was getting closer to where the crafts were docked. If he could just make it to the Tin Soldier. Someone grabbed for him, yanked him into an alley, and slammed him against the wall. Vincent. He kept a hand on Allie's chest, pinning him to the wall at arm's length. The doorway was narrow and almost entirely concealed by a well-placed moonfruit cart. Two foxes flew past them, and after a couple of seconds, Allie swatted Vin's hand down. Neither of them had been breathing.
"Where the hell have you been?" Vin asked.
"Had to take a detour," he said, breathing hard.
"In case you hadn't noticed, there were Tossin and foxes on my ass."
"Right, you're a badass," Vin said. "Let's move."
They were no more than a quick sprint from the docks. Nearly 1,000 souls, half of them humans in jumpsuits, worked the port, importing and exporting goods across moons and planets and asteroid colonies. Apparently traffic had tripled in the black market when Siotra had shut down Cebu's ports after the assassination. Allie could see the Tin Soldier in the distance, docked between a flotsam of bigger and more expensive craft, small and battered, and so familiar it pulled at Allie's chest.
"We gotta make a run for it," Vin said.
"Aren't we already making a run for it?"
They had to lean into the wind as they tore across the playa, their jumpsuits flapping, handkerchiefs to their mouths. Allie zipped his jumpsuit higher so that the plants would be safe. Without his goggles, he couldn't keep the grit out of his eyes, and he focused on watching Vin trek in front of him in the sea of jumpsuits. They threaded through the crowd of Kalusians and Mizu, hoping they'd lost the Tossin and Dirkatsians behind them. As they gained on the docks, where they'd parked his pod, they also left behind the shelter from the wind. Every step that closed the gap felt harder than the last, like the world had tilted, and now they were walking up a vertical line. At the last second, Vin turned and seized Allie's hand, dragging him for their last few steps. Together, they fell out of the howling wind. By the time the Tossin had enough sense to comb the port, they were already gone, vanished back into the darkness of deep space. Chapter 11. Rhiannon. An hour had passed, maybe two, since Rhi had been captured at her own memorial service. She had been just moments away from plunging the knife into Siotra. She recalled the surprised look on his face as he turned to see what the commotion was about. Rhi wondered if Siotra had recognized her. Now she was being led by two silent guards down a pitch-dark corridor. She wanted to fight her way, but the adrenaline had drained her body, and her knees buckled as she walked. Rhi guessed she was underground by the damp smell and by the muffled sound her voice made when she asked question after question. "Who are you? Where are you taking me? How does it feel to serve a traitor?" As the guards brought Rhi to Siotra, they probably thought they had the advantage, simply because she was their prisoner. But she was the one who'd spent half her life preparing for this moment. Rhi stopped counting the turns, but squinted as light began to permeate the woven threads of the cloth covering her face. Natural light. They'd brought her above ground,
Finally, they stopped, and a door opened before her. Rhee was pushed through a threshold as someone yanked off her hood. She was blinded by the sunlight that reflected off every surface. The room was all white, full of white furniture and white tasseled pillows and white curtains that blew in the breeze. Someone in the center of the room came for her now, a dark silhouette moving swiftly. Rhee fumbled toward a nearby table and snatched up the first thing she could get her hands on.
"Stay back!" she yelled. "Ancestors, Anuk, what do you plan to do with that?"
A woman's voice, deep and familiar. Tai Rayana. It had always sounded to Rhee as if her voice were full of smoke. It lingered in a room even after she was done speaking. Only then did Rhee realize she was holding a hairbrush.
"You!" Rhee said, face to face with Tai Rayana.
She had hated being called Anuk. It meant child, and felt especially patronizing since she no longer was one. It was a tactic, a way to remind Rhee of the girl she'd been when her family died.
"You had me kidnapped?"
"It was that, or have you imprisoned," she said.
Rhee realized it was the first time she'd ever seen her Tai's hair. Rather than tucked up under an elaborately arranged scarf, it fell around her face in black waves, threaded with streaks of silver.
"I feared you were moving toward the latter option by shoving your way through the crowd like a maniac. I told the guards you were merely a young girl, and you might need some guidance. Which you do."
"Why did you blindfold me?"
Tai Rayana shook her head.
"So you couldn't run away before we spoke."
Her advisor had been lettering. Rhee could see the uniform lines of cursive across a scroll of brown paper behind her. Watching her Tai practice the ancient art used to relax her. It required a certain stillness and patience that reminded her of Vayrin. He and Tai Rayana had never seemed friendly, but the two had been alike in so many ways. Rhee studied Tai Rayana's face. She was her advisor, her mentor, her teacher, and her guide. Could the woman who'd taught her history and languages, fled with her to safety of the desert moon, watched over her for the past 9 years, have conspired to have her killed? Rhee didn't want to believe that was possible. But Vayrin had looked after her, too.
"Where are we?" Rhee asked cautiously.
But one look out the window, and she already knew. The Tanopa crystals in the distance. That meant Dalin was close by.
"I will ask the questions," Tai Rayana said in a raised voice.
Her face had turned stony, rough, like the hard-packed sand that was left once the foam of a wave receded.
"Where have you been?"
Rhee looked down. It was unusual for Tai Rayana to show emotion. She'd been rigid and focused during those years on Nau Fruma. But now, organic memories bubbled to the surface of Rhee's mind. Tai Rayana, younger, helping her dress and teaching her to read. Her laugh, how forceful it was. A loud exhale.
"Ha!"
Just once before she began to snicker. How could Rhee have forgotten those moments? But she knew the answer, because she hadn't saved them, replayed them. They'd been archived from disuse so long ago.
"Answer me!" Tai Rayana demanded.
Now Rhee's tongue felt fat and clumsy, and she couldn't find the words. It was as if they'd been transported back to Nau Fruma, to the dusty palace and the daily lessons. What could she say? Tai Rayana strode across the room, back straight, with purpose. Rhee tensed. She glanced outside and quickly counted 3 stories down. There was a small tree to break her fall if she needed to jump. But Tai Rayana only swept her into an unexpected hug. Rhee was not used to their touching. In fact, the last time the Tai had held her, she was 6 and had just learned of her parents' death. Another memory she'd archived,
hidden deep within her cube, so she wouldn't ever have to remember it again. Ree felt herself succumbing, becoming that little girl all over again. The tie was skin and bones. Had she always been this tiny? But the familiar smell of incense that clung to her robes was bold and fragrant. Ree inhaled deeply, feeling her eyes well, feeling at last that she was holding on to a piece of home. For a second, she forgot all of it. Vayrin, the Elidio exploding, the riots and the martial law. Siotra here on this very asteroid.
How did you escape? Tyrianna said into Ree's hair. How did you survive?
The question brought Ree back to herself. She pushed out of the tie's embrace.
How did you survive?
Ree asked, not unkindly. But she took a step back just the same.
I saw the Elidio explode.
We were evacuated. I went to find you, but the Tossen forced us onto the escape pods, and I trusted Vayrin would... She trailed off at the mention of his name, as if it deserved the respect of their ancestors.
Did everyone manage to escape?
No, Tyrianna said, straightening the folds at the front of her robes. She'd always demanded perfection, though Ree couldn't help but wonder if it was an excuse to look away.
There weren't enough pods for everyone.
Ree felt a twist of new guilt. They'd used a pod for Vayrin's body.
It wasn't until I was grounded that I realized you hadn't made it out. I heard that Vayrin died trying to save you from an attacker, a Raten boy,
Tyrianna said. And even she, who was supposed to be neutral, couldn't help but show her distaste.
That's a lie, Ree said. I've never seen that boy. All of the Hollows are reporting it.
Ree knew that. She'd been watching. They'd claimed Alyosha Miraz had enlisted in the Uniforce under false credentials in a long-term plot to assassinate her. Rumor had it he'd planted that explosive device in case his attempt on her life had failed.
Have they caught him?
Ree asked. When Tyrianna shook her head, she exhaled with relief. But with his image beamed everywhere across the universe, it couldn't be long.
So many people dead in her place. What's going on, Rhiannon? What have you done to your face? What happened to you?
Tyrianna said. There were dark half-moons under her eyes. Ree brought her hand up to touch her face, which was still swollen.
You know what happened, she said without bitterness.
She'd lost the will to play games, trying to outmaneuver and outsmart at every turn. The mounting deaths weighed on her, and the memory of Siotra waving from the knoll burned inside of her. Siotra sent Vayrin to kill me. There was a question buried deep inside, clawing its way out of her throat and onto the tip of her tongue. Did you conspire with him? But she couldn't bring herself to ask it.
Vayrin!
Tyrianna repeated. The woman turned away, gripping the windowsill as though to stay on her feet.
No, he wouldn't.
Tyrianna looked back at her.
Whoever sent him, it wasn't Andres Siotra. He was your father's closest and oldest friend,
she said, her voice a low current that shocked Ree.
They were as close as brothers. Andres Siotra fought to be crowned regent so he could protect the Ta'an's interests.
I know that. It makes his betrayal 10 times worse, Ree said.
There was no betrayal, Tyrianna said sharply. Not by him. He has been loyal to your bloodline.
He opposed the Urnu Treaty because it did not go far enough,
Tyrianna cut her off.
He wanted a peace that endured even if there was no Ta'an on the throne.
Don't you see? He worried that otherwise there was incentive to kill you. To kill all of you.
Ancestors help me,
Tyrianna murmured, pinching the bridge of her nose.
Is this what you've believed the whole time? Is this why you refused to see him all these years?
You knew that he wanted to see me?
Rhi felt the knowledge bleed through her, staining every bit of her silly, petty soul.
Of course, he'd consulted me on the matter. He thought he must remind you of your grief, and we'd agreed we had to give you time.
Every hair stood on end.
Half the beings in the galaxy will want you dead, he'd said in her memory.
Is this what he'd been speaking of? That the treaty did not provide strong enough protections? Had she even ever bothered to find out? No. She was getting confused. Siotra was responsible. Rhi was sure of it. She'd always been sure of it. The goal she'd worked toward was so tantalizingly close, and she couldn't afford to be distracted by any doubts.
Take me to Siotra. I want to talk to him, Rhi said. I want to know everything that he'd meant to tell me. From the beginning.
It was a half-truth. She did want to talk to Siotra. To face him. To call him a liar. And to kill him still. Despite what Ty Rayana said. Or perhaps because of it. Rhi still wasn't certain she could trust her entirely.
You should have reached out earlier.
Ty Rayana turned away from her and moved to the door.
I mourned you. I prayed to you. And this whole time you were still alive.
Rhi didn't answer. She imagined her heart as a stone. Something impenetrable, unmoved. Someone had to pay for her grief. No. Siotra had to pay. Because the terrifying truth had come to her. She wanted him to be guilty. She needed him to be guilty. So she could finally atone. Rhi should have died with her family. This was the only way to say she was sorry. The Tanopa Palace Library was nothing like the libraries she'd known. Her mother had maintained the palace library back in Cebu. But its smell had been worn and musty. And comforting, too, like a soft blanket slipped around your shoulders. Sunlight would filter in, slanting slowly across the room. This library was cold, dim, and without windows. As they moved through the enormous towers of books, goosebumps formed on Rhi's arms and shoulders. The room must have been climate-controlled to preserve the paper, but her body was reacting to something apart from the temperature. Half the books were wrapped in plastic, sheathed like dead bodies, or tucked behind glass. Their footsteps barely made a sound on the carpet.
Where is he?
Rhi whispered. The library appeared to be deserted. Ty Rayana just frowned and shook her head. Rhi heard light footsteps and turned just in time to see the shadow of a man pass quickly between shelves. Electricity danced on her skin. A trap. It had to be a trap. She looked at Ty Rayana.
You lied to me!
Her governess was short, like her. They stood face to face, and Ty Rayana looked terrified.
Where is he?
Ty Rayana shook her head.
Siotra?
She croaked, and then cleared her throat.
Siotra! No!
Siotra's voice came from somewhere in the stacks.
It's a trap! Get her out of here!
Just then, a high-pitched whine sounded throughout the room, a noise that reminded Rhi of charge, of current, of electricity humming to life. Before she could wonder what it was, they were thrown backward by the force of a blinding white explosion. Debris was flung everywhere, and charred paper and ash fell among them like snow. Rhi could barely hear anything. It was like the world had been muted and replaced by a low hum. She pushed herself up on her elbows and saw Ty Rayana a few feet away but unmoving. Rhi tried to call to her but could barely hear her own voice. She crawled through pieces of splintered bookshelf, through fluttering paper, feeling as if her body too had been blown apart, as if it were taking forever for her brain to send commands to her arms and legs. Ty Rayana opened her eyes when Rhi shook her.
but immediately, the hazy look fell away, her eyes wide as she pulled Rhi close and said something in urgent tones. Rhi couldn't make out her words over the hum in her ears.
"I can't hear you," she said, then tried to repeat louder. "Stay here!"
Tai Rayana's eyes were wide. She looked like she was on the verge of tears. Rhi had never seen her cry. Fear filled up every atom of Rhi's body. She felt like it would overflow out of her eyes, but she pushed herself forward. She slipped between two bookcases that had miraculously remained upright. She squeezed the hilt of the knife so tightly her knuckles went white. She sidestepped down the row, still trying to clear the buzzing from her ears. She used to hide in her mother's library, too, back on Kalu. Those floors were covered with tasseled rugs, woven through with red and orange hues, so thick it felt like a forest floor. She'd crawl along those very rugs, through a maze of table legs and chairs and a game of hide-and-seek. And she remembered now how Jocelyn had surprised her once, poking her head out upside down from the table above, her thick braids swinging like a pendulum as she said, "Boo!" Another explosion. This time, Reed dropped and clamped her hands to her ears, and when the dust and paper mist cleared, she found she hadn't lost full use of her hearing. From somewhere nearby, she could hear Siotra moaning. Someone else was after Siotra, too. Maybe someone who didn't want her to have answers? There was no more time to think. She spun around the bookshelf and had a quick view of a bloodied Siotra on the ground and a tall figure in a hooded cape standing above him. When the man began to turn, she spun her leg out in a low roundhouse. As he collapsed, she jumped, driving him to the ground and then mounting his back. She stuck her knee in a pressure point at the base of his spine and sunk the point of her knife in his neck so that it barely broke skin. It happened so quickly that only when she was positioned did she see his neck was covered in tattoos, and that he had dirty blonde hair and wore a black ring on his right hand.
"Dalin?"
She moved off of him and stumbled backward, horrified.
"What? What are you doing?"
"This is what you wanted, isn't it?" Dalin extended his right hand towards Siotra, as if he were commanding him to stop, and Rhi watched in horror and fascination as electricity gathered in the base of his palm. It was the ring. Fontizian technology at work. Tiny surges flared outward like the veins in a leaf, seemingly grabbing energy in the air and burning it, converting the air to forks of blue and white flame.
"Stop!" Rhi said.
The stream of smokeless fire wrapped Siotra up and lifted him off the ground, folding him nearly in two as he moaned in pain.
"Stop!"
She sprang to tackle Dalin, but she crashed into a wall of air, clear but firm, and it wouldn't let her get to him.
"He is a war criminal," Dalin said. "He deserves what he gets."
"Stop! Stop! Stop!"
Rhi was screaming so hard her voice was raw. She ran again and again for Siotra, trying to break the invisible barrier, but it was impossible. She was bruised, thrown backward off her feet, as if she were running into a solid wall. And finally, mercifully, Dalin did stop. The regent collapsed backward, his mouth dark with blood, his clothing smoking.
"Why?"
Rhi couldn't help it. She was crying now.
"Why?"
"He does not deserve your tears," Dalin said coldly. "He betrayed the Order, and he betrayed you."
Siotra struggled to sit up.
"I've made peace with your elder boy."
"And what of all the souls you took?" Dalin asked. "You can't make peace with the dead."
Siotra shook his head and looked at Rhi.
"I never betrayed you."
"You betrayed my family,"
she said, but as the words came out, she felt uncertainty gripping her. Her skin felt tight. That smile she'd seen. The words she'd overheard. Fragments, really. What did they mean?
"That's what you think?"
He was consumed by a hacking cough that brought up more black blood.
I swear on my life, Rhiannon. I loved your family like my own. I've wanted to speak with you for so long. So many memories I wanted you to see. I've been trying to protect you. I've been...
The words died in his throat. Dalin held up a hand again, and the regent began to seize. Sparks danced from his body. Fire flowed like a ribbon tying Dalin and Siotra together. Then, Siotra's body burst into sudden flame. He mumbled, but Rhi couldn't hear, couldn't understand. Only one phrase reached her.
Mata'an Sarili!
He yelled. In a single second, Siotra's body began to crumble, the fire eating away at his edges, until his face and eyes and shock-white hair disappeared into black. He dropped like sands of an hourglass into a tiny mountain of ash on the gray floor. He hadn't even screamed. Rhi looked at Dalin.
How dare you?
She tasted ash on her tongue. He was not a good man, Dalin said, his tone flat and expressionless as always. He opened his palm, and the ring gave off blue sparks before it turned black again. Dalin's hand was badly burned.
He held my elder hostage for years, but not before he commanded the slaughter of one monastery in the order. The very home of my family.
You know this boy?
Tai Rayana's voice was practically a whisper, but it still startled Rhi. She turned and saw her advisor limping toward them through the wreckage.
This fanatic.
Rhi felt as if she were the one who'd been incinerated. All of her beliefs were smoke. They'd all blown apart. For the last 9 years, she knew Siotra had been responsible for her family's deaths. And now, she couldn't even trust herself to tell left from right or up from down. Dalin saved my life.
He killed the regent, an ally to your family, the one man trying to keep peace.
This man did not believe in peace, Dalin said. His eyes were dark and unreadable. He's a murderer who has never atoned for his sins. But Vodhan will be his judge.
Your precious Vodhan,
Tyriana said, with so much hatred that it transformed her features to someone Rhi didn't recognize.
There is no god that could help a soul as rotten as yours.
A crash sounded above them. Footsteps rattled the lights in their glass casing.
Tossin, Dalin turned to Tai Rayana. You called them. You called them yourself,
Tai Rayana snapped.
Or did you imagine that you could burn half the library without anyone remarking on it?
Rhi's heart felt as if it might jump straight out of her chest. The footsteps were closer now, and if they were caught here, with the remains of Siotra...
If your god exists... I hope your punishment is slow and vengeful.
Rhi took a step backward. Panic welled inside of her.
I can't be caught,
she said.
No, Rhi. You're safe now.
Tai Rayana's voice was gentler this time.
Your guard is coming.
Vayrin was part of my guard, and he betrayed me,
Rhi said.
I must go.
Tai Rayana caught her arm.
Go? With this murderer?
She has no other choice, Dalin said. I can better serve her than you can.
Both were true. He was a murderer, and she had no choice. If Siotra hadn't been responsible for her family's deaths, her would-be assassin was still out in the universe, roaming free. Tai Rayana pulled Rhi into a fierce hug, whispering an old blessing into her hair.
May the ancestors be with you.
Rhi bowed her head and let the blessing wash over her.
She felt the warmth of 1,000 perfectly sunny days on her skin. Tai Rayana pulled away.
There's a secret passageway there, she continued, behind the second column. It leads underground and out near the ruins. You'll be in darkness, but there is only one path. Follow it.
It had been Tai Rayana watching over her the whole time she was in Nao Fruma. She'd taken that for granted.
I'll come back for you, Rhee said.
You can't. It won't be safe, Dalin interjected from behind her. Rhee ripped the hem of her tunic, and a long scrap of it came free.
I'll have to tie your hands. They can't think you had anything to do with what happened here, she said.
Rhee's fingers were shaking as she wound the fabric around the Tai's wrists. Her advisor's hands were limp. She looked at Rhee as if she'd never seen her before. Maybe she hadn't. Not the real Rhee.
Princess, Dalin said from behind them. We're out of time.
His voice made her insides curdle now. He had robbed her of her one chance to know the truth. He was a murderer.
You'll be changed, he'd said.
Dalin knew this more than anyone, because he was too far gone.
I'm sorry, Rhee said. For everything.
Tai Rayana leaned in and put her mouth close to her ear.
I will be loyal to you until the day I die.
Dalin grabbed Rhee's arm and pulled her into the tunnel entrance. Rhee feared it would be the last she ever saw of the Tai, the woman who had been like family to her, crouched at the remains of a dead regent. What's worse, she feared her Tai's words were an omen, a prophecy.
Mata'an Sarili, Rhee pledged over her shoulder.
Honor, bravery, loyalty.
I hope you mean it, child.
Tai Rayana called out as Rhee walked into the darkness. Chapter 12 Alyosha Ali watched through the monitors as Jerkatz receded in the distance. They'd easily slid past the first customs checkpoint and would soon be in Portus, where they would meet Vin's contact. So close. Alyosha finally felt like he could breathe. Literally. Oxygen levels have already improved by 12%, Pavel announced. The specimen is a Shangdi variety indigenous to the western hemisphere of Fontis. Very unusual. Known to bloom during the monsoon season.
Oh, yeah? Ali said distractedly.
Pavel was particularly chipper. He'd stayed back and updated all of his software. But Ali wasn't in the mood for chipper. He eyed the hammer on Vin's hip for a second, then leaned forward in his chair. He watched Vin plot the coordinates. They'd been hopscotching their way toward the outer planet of Portus. If they flew in a straight line, it would take 3 days, tops. But it was hard to tell which routes were being patrolled at any given time. It was safer to stay in random orbits. Fly around, blend with the intergalactic traffic, get lost in the shuffle, which would add another 10 days, at least. The tin soldier had been modified from the inside out, practically gutted so that it barely looked like the pod Alyosha knew. That was the point, to be unrecognizable. And Ali had made a few adjustments of his own, in secret. He typed in a 10-digit code on his side of the console.
So, you gonna apologize?
Ali asked finally as their pod slowed to a halt.
For what? Vin wouldn't look at him.
What the hell did you just do?
He jabbed the keys of the console. Still, they hung motionless, suspended in space.
For getting us into that mess back there.
He leaned back again, enjoying himself. For once, he was in the right.
You got us into this mess.
Vin countered evenly.
How do you figure? You knocked my mask off.
Vin still wouldn't look at him as he tried punching in code after code to unfreeze the console.
Fine, Ali. Everything is my fault.
You're always right. He slammed the dash with a fist. Now unlock the nav system.
Say it like you mean it.
Vincent suddenly unclipped and lunged, but Allie blocked him with his free hand and held him at arm's length. Vin's legs started to lift up in the air, and he floated nearly upside down.
Unlock it, he said. We don't have time for your bullshit.
Look who's talking. Allie unstrapped, and they both floated up toward the ceiling. But he levered off the walls, kicking away from Vin. It had started as a joke. Kind of. But he could feel his anger bubbling up from all the hidden places. My face is plastered on every telepod across the entire known universe. I've been framed for murder, and all you've done is give me Tahis.
Stop playing the victim.
Vin's blue eyes were as big and intense as ever.
This is war, Allie. Massive scale, insane galactic war. So maybe instead of sucking your thumb and feeling sorry for yourself, you should stop and ask yourself, why?
Gentlemen, please. Pavel stretched out two claw attachments and tugged at their pant sleeves, trying to wrestle them back into their seats. They both kicked out of his grip, and Pavel gave off an engine whirl that sounded like a sigh.
Why did they frame you?
Vin's voice had dropped.
I'm the spy. I'm the one who sent out the hail.
Something thick and sticky was working its way through Allie's brain. The silence stretched out around them, as if it, too, were free of gravity, and diffusing through the ship.
Because I'm Rayton, he said finally.
It would always come back to his nation, his second citizen status. He remembered what Vin had said earlier.
If you weren't always trying to get people to like you,
was that true?
Probably.
He was mostly just trying to get people to like Raytons, to show everyone that Raytons were more than the rabid guerrilla fighters they'd seen on the Hollows during the Great War. But he was trying to show the Raytons, too, what they could be, what he wanted them to be.
It was easy for the public to swallow. They want to get back at us for allying with Fontis.
Yeah, all of that. Vin looked at him.
You were convenient. You were the perfect spur-of-the-moment scapegoat to stoke the flames of war. But you were a diversion. The question is, what were they trying to hide?
The fire had seemed to drain out of him. He gripped his way to the dash and looked out into the darkness. They needed to distract the public from rumors that the princess is still alive.
You know?
Allie asked. He hadn't told him about the braid he found in the escape pod.
We suspected as much.
He leaned back like he was trying to get a better look at Allie, trying to take him all in.
How long have you known?
Since I found the dead now Fruman in the royal escape pod.
Wait!
Vin stared at him.
What escape pod?
Allie told him, finally, about catching up to the royal escape pod and the dead man with the braid coiled on his chest. Vin just stared.
You're talking about Princess Rhiannon?
No, the other assassinated princess, Allie said. But when he saw Vin's face, he knew to drop the sarcasm.
Holy Tahis. Do you know what this means?
Vin asked.
You knew this whole time, and you didn't say anything?
Don't try to lecture me about keeping secrets. Allie said. Vin made a face. And anyway, who the hell are you talking about? Vin hesitated.
Princess Jocelyn, he said, after a pause.
Allie nearly laughed, would have laughed, if Vin didn't look so serious. Sure, there were always rumors that she'd survived the crash. Conspiracy theories, that kind of thing. You could find anything if you went deep enough on the Hollows.
I've been tracking her. When I was back in Cebu,
Allie could barely process what he was saying.
When were you in Cebu?
During leave a few months back. The last time they were all on leave, Alyosha went to Jethazar's house. Vincent had said he was going to the coast to meet up with a fan. Allie figured he was off doing who knows what
with one of the thousands of girls who proposed to him on the Hollows or cried when he came on screen. For some reason, this lie hit him harder than the others.
"Can I believe anything you tell me?"
Allie hated how he sounded, like a desperate younger brother shut out of a game.
"You can believe this," Vin said softly.
"I think she's alive. The United Planets thinks she's alive. It's even more important now that we find her." Allie could see him chewing the inside of his mouth, like he did sometimes when he was thinking.
"Listen, we have to risk taking the direct route to Portis. Even if there are patrols, we need to get there as fast as..."
Just then, a loud pop made the whole hull shudder. The craft tilted noticeably, and the metal shell around them groaned.
"What the..."
But Allie knew right away what it was. Someone had locked onto the craft.
"A grav beam?"
Vin swam back down into his seat, kicking off the walls and strapping in. Allie did the same and unlocked the nav system from his screen.
"It's not a grav beam," Allie said. "The velocity was too slight. It feels almost... magnetic."
As he said the last word, he swung to the window. He had a visual on a body 30 astro units in the distance.
What quadrant were they in again?
Bezoral.
Bezoral quadrant.
He scanned the nav stats and his blood went cold.
"Chartois," he swore. "We're being pulled into Nidus."
"Nidus," Vin repeated. He said it like a death sentence. He frantically began pressing buttons and pulling at the console, but Allie knew it was too late. Nidus was another dwarf planet, with an enormous valley of magnetic lava that had cooled and hardened centuries ago. Equipment failed constantly, and crashes were common because everyone was pulled into its magnetic field. Every pilot knew to avoid it, but they'd drifted. They'd stopped paying attention, all because of a stupid fight that Allie had started. The pull got stronger, and they picked up speed as they were drawn helplessly toward the planet. It felt like the pod was made of glass, like it might shatter.
"P!" Allie had to shout. "What are our chances of pulling out?"
The droid's lights went red and blinked blue again.
"Our mass is too small and our thrust insufficient, even with recent upgrades."
Translation? No chance. We're all screwed. A sudden jolt pushed them against the hull of the ship, and he could feel the G-force building. Everything was vibrating. He could hear them cutting through space, as loud as a bolt of thunder that never stopped. The shaking became intense and rattled its way into his brain. Metal seams shifted and flexed like tectonic plates. Lights flickered on and off, the console a staticky red until it was total darkness, apart from the red glow from Pavel's eye lights. Outside, pieces of the tin soldier detached and burned through the atmosphere alongside the main pod, a trail of red-orange fire behind them.
"We have to make it to Portis! We have to get to the United Planets!" Vin shouted. "But if one of us doesn't make it..."
"We're going to make it," Allie yelled. "We'll get there."
A wing detached and darted away into the void. They barrel rolled, end over end, so many times he lost count. He felt sick, an ocean in his stomach ready to come up and drown them all. It was just like how Vin used to turn the revolutionary over for fun to mess with him. Except this wasn't for fun. And Vin wasn't going to pull them out. They were going to die.
"Look, Allie, I'm sorry for what I said. I meant to tell you..."
But his voice was drowned out by an urgent mechanical beeping. The tin soldier, his old friend, was coming apart. Down they plunged, burning through atmosphere, hurtling toward the surface of the planet's ocean. Faster, more pressure. He could barely breathe. Then, a thunderous boom, a violent jolt, metal groaning. He grabbed for Vin, his best friend, the two of them going down after all they'd been through.
"You can have my hammer," Allie told him.
Or maybe he thought it. A wave of water slammed them backward. Then,
A current of white water poured in from the metal cracks and tore them apart.
Part 3. The Departed. In the last G1K summit, Kalusian neurobiologist Diak Zofim surprised the scientific world when she introduced what she called a reader. It could override security measures and read the contents of a person's cube. Impressive enough. But think about this. For what purpose would you use it? What gave anyone the right to access someone's cube without their express consent? It would be useful for interplanetary security, the supporters argued. But it sounded like a slippery slope to me. There were a lot of living rights activists who agreed. And it sparked a series of protests that would have been front and center, but they were overshadowed by the twin bombings of Resto and Reta. Eventually, the tech was quietly deemed illegal, but they announced it at a time when the public had other things on their mind. Living rights activist and reporter, identity unknown. Archives provided by the United Planets. Chapter 13. Rhiannon. Rhi and Jocelyn had always fought for the window seat. They'd traveled often as a family, her father urging diplomacy, to take turns and to share. That didn't always work. Jocelyn and Rhi would pinch each other's thighs and whisper insults until finally, boiling with rage, screeching and hissing like vultures, the two would be separated. Neither of them with the window seat to show for it. She hadn't thought of that in ages. Not when there'd been so many good memories to replay. Moments where it felt like they were a team. Rhi had willfully forgotten how lonely it was sometimes to have a sister. How sometimes you could be sitting alone, even if she was right next to you. After 5 days offline, the sense of liberation had rapidly worn off. Rhi had thought that without her cube, her mind would remain clear and focused, and that the temptation of revisiting memories would be removed. But all it did was open up a path for the more painful ones to surface. Her last fight with Joss, the goodbye with Julian as comets burned overhead. Vayron's tears as he tried to end her life. "You're not still upset?" Dallin asked her. It had been 2 days since parting ways with Ty Rayana and traversing the dark tunnel that had allowed them to escape from Tinopa, and these were the first words he had spoken to her. Rhi angled her body to the Zeppelin window so as not to have a look at him. Every time she did, her eyes zeroed in on the ring he wore. She knew it was Fontesian technology. He'd explained that he'd put electromagnetic currents from the air and focused them with his ring into heat energy. But Rhi swore instead that it was charged with hatred and vengeance and all the other dark feelings she knew too well. And what did it mean that he no longer scared her? She understood him. He'd killed Siotra for the same reason Rhi had planned her own revenge for so many years. He'd lost people he loved on Siotra's order. Watch them die on his word. Rhi had been right about the bigger picture, but wrong about the details. The man was a killer, certainly. But he hadn't killed her family. He'd killed Dallin's. What made up Dallin's Mata'am Sarili? She thought it was about following orders, about obeying the word of his god without question. But she wasn't sure now. And it irked her. How interchangeable their anger was, their bloodlust. He'd killed Siotra after she'd pleaded for him not to, when he knew the man had invaluable information about the death of her family. Was this part of his plan all along? Rhi was the one who'd brought him there. She felt stupid and young, so singularly focused, unable to think ahead or see the bigger picture. She ached for her cube now, to replay that conversation with Vayron just before his death. Hadn't he confirmed it was Siotra who had sent Vayron after Rhi? Or had she only assumed?
You've been blind. Blind and willful, he'd said.
I may have miscalculated your response, Dallin added in the wake of her silence. But your consent to join me in Portis is the right choice. She turned to him and found his expression remorseless. By now, Rhiannon spoke Dallin fluently. He'd meant sorry and thanks for coming, in his own way. She disagreed, though. It wasn't the right choice. And while Dallin believed she'd at last agreed to receive the protection of the United Planets in Portis, or at least his order's mysterious contact at the Council, she had other plans. Dallin had proved he cared only about his vengeance, that he'd put it above all else. Which meant she was free to care only for hers. She would find a way to sneak off at the next stop, where Nero would be meeting with the governments of collusion allies to discuss the political climate. The Urnu Treaty was in turmoil, and the public was becoming restless. The news of Siotra's death, or rather disappearance, since his body had been incinerated, was everywhere. Nero had been covering all of it and had been on air for 12 hours straight. He'd arranged to make an emergency appearance on Navrum to try to rally support for Kalu's interests.
The brave and honorable people of Kalu don't just need answers. They demand action,
Nero's holographic image said sternly. The man a row in front tried to adjust the size and volume of his holo projection and re-leaned forward, straining to see and hear.
The people who killed our Princess Ta'an and took our Regent Siotra think we'll bow down, run scared. But it's they who are the cowards, jealous of our freedoms, trying to destroy our collusion values.
Dallin kicked the man's seat, and he lurched forward, dropping his handheld. The hollow disappeared.
Apologies,
Dallin said, barely audible. The man scowled back but said nothing. Nero was misguided at best, and Rhi knew it would likely only further notch the galaxy toward war. But it was a rallying cry, a call for revenge against those who'd killed the family he served. He'd loved her father, and the brilliant speech he'd given after his death, praising his accomplishments as emperor, urging continued loyalty and patience as the last Ta'an learned to rule, had inspired a galaxy. An idea opened up in her mind, like a fist unclenching. The sooner she got to him, the sooner she could unveil herself on his broadcast. Too many people had already died, and now her priority was to take back the throne and restore the terms of the truce. It was only as empress that she could root out the true traitor. Stepping into her role as empress would make her untouchable, and with that impunity, she would find her family's real killer. The speaker system came online with a single crackle of interference. Approaching a patch of solar wind, cubes will go temporarily offline, a mechanized voice said. The announcement triggered unease in the cabin. People were uncomfortable offline, even for a few minutes. On the Zeppelin this close to the sun, electromagnetic waves had caused signal losses throughout the trip. The passengers were so distressed about it, no one had noticed Rhi and Dallin had been moving from one passenger car to another. Now he motioned for her to gather her things. It was perfect timing. As they slid out of their seats, a service droid was just entering their car, tall and lean, its metal dull with age.
"Tickets, please," it announced in a low monotone.
The droid offered the screen on its chest to a squat charm woman with tiny iridescent scales that looked gray from Rhi's angle. In the first row, the woman touched her finger to her cube and simultaneously pressed a finger to the droid's screen with her other hand. It blinked blue and beeped an approval when the woman's data was accepted. The overhead speakers crackled to life again. Approaching a patch of solar wind, cubes will temporarily go offline in 2 minutes. Dallin leaned forward to whisper to Rhi as she pushed past him into the aisle.
Whatever happens, don't touch the droid screen.
I know that already,
she snapped back. Once her fingerprint was in the database, they'd match it to her DNA. With any luck, however, while the droid was offline, they could sneak past it and return to a car that had already been checked. Rhi counted seconds in her head as she dodged a tentacle and brushed up against the fur of a Yershin, which generated a charge on her bare skin. Several passengers shrank away from her, obviously unhappy to be sharing the train car with a marked girl. Dallin's presence didn't offer them any reassurance. The tattoos crawling along his neck, his cheekbones sharp like cut glass, his dirty blonde hair matted like an animal's against moonwhite skin. It was almost as if pheromones radiated from his skin and warned everyone of danger. Please remain in your seat, the droid said as Dallin tried to pass.
Won't you kindly move?
Dallin asked, with such exaggerated politeness Rhi couldn't believe the droid didn't register the sarcasm. Before she could prevent him, he grabbed her hand.
My sister isn't feeling well.
Julian was the last person who had taken Rhi's hand. Rhi wrenched her hand away from Dallin, annoyed by the obvious lie. And yet, why not? With her face still purpled with the mark, and her non-pointed ears hidden beneath a hood, she might have been Fontesian. In that split second, she realized the boy she disliked most in the world could have been the brother she'd never had. Both orphans, rigid in their beliefs, born for strife and loss and revenge. The droid pivoted its base so it blocked as much of the aisle as possible. Please provide your ticket information before proceeding. It sprayed its screen with a pine-scented sanitizer, angling it down toward Rhi. She felt the skin on her neck tingle. Approaching a patch of atmospheric solar wind, cubes will temporarily go offline in 1 minute, the speaker voice announced.
Here, let me,
Dallin said, feigning irritation. He touched the space on his neck 2 inches above his cube and moved to touch the screen. Just before he did, a small charge shot from his ring to the screen. It was so subtle that no one would have seen it apart from Rhi. The droid rolled back an inch, and light shuddered across its touchscreen, as if it had flinched. Unreadable, it said.
Perhaps your reader is defective,
Dallin suggested, still with that tone of politeness that to Rhi's ears sounded obviously false.
Let me try again.
Can I assist? A second droid said.
Turning, Rhiannon saw they'd failed to notice an additional ticket collector had entered the car. The speaker crackled. Approaching a patch of atmospheric solar wind, cubes will temporarily go offline in 10, 9, 8. Now they'd attracted attention. She heard the sucking sound of someone's tentacle. A Nilapas, babbling in his native tongue. No doubt trying to shush them. Rhi could feel herself sweating under her tunic. Still, she tried to move slowly and with grace. A quality Ty Rayana had urged again and again.
Excuse me, can you give her some room? She's not feeling well,
Dallin said. The second droid ignored him. It angled its screen down toward Rhi.
Please provide ticket information.
When Rhi hesitated, a red light began blinking on its touchscreen, prompting her with use instructions. Now the first droid rolled over Dallin's foot, closing in on the other side, and both droids began to speak at once.
Please provide ticket info.
They were interrupted by a thunderous boom that shook their cabin. Rhi's ears popped. A girl to the side yelped, her light blue skin turning a dark shade of purple in alarm. And a collusion man in the front row flinched in his seat. Rhi remembered the sensation of her cube going dark, like her energy had been sapped all at once. Immediately, both droids powered down in the aisle, their arm-like attachments hanging limp at their sides. A section of Yershins groomed one another's fur in agitation. Rhi exhaled.
just in time. Let's move, Dallin said in a low voice. The doors between compartments had come unlocked as well, and Dallin cranked the handle and leaned heavily on the door to open it, gesturing